Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. Welcome, 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 my friends, to Off the Cuff with SDJ. What the hell is my name?
Who are you?
Oh my God, who am I? I've changed so much in the last 2 hours. I don't remember. Okay, I think I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston, who happens to go by SDJ because it's shorter, but who knows who I am today. But I know who I'm with. I know who I'm with. I am with the amazing Lynn Ames. Welcome, Lynn.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you, Sunny. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. You know, you are just such a light, and it makes me so happy to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to share you with so many people. So those of you that are joining us, this is Off the Cuff with SDJ. Now I remember my name. We are a Off the Cuff podcast. This really is just conversational. It's meant to raise your vibration and expand your minds and hearts and open the door to conversation. And I love to shine a light on beautiful, bright lights out in the world. And I've known Lynn for quite a few years now. And another person that loves angels. So we talked about angels yesterday. We've got angels again today.
Yeah.
And we are excited to have this conversation. So because it's off the cuff, guys, it's not planned. And we're just going to kind of see where we go and take it from there. But what I do want to do is I want to start by sharing with you a little bit about Lynn. So you know a little about her because she's got, well, there's a lot to know about her, but I've got a short bio. So we fit it in, you know, about 100 words. So Lynn, let me share a little bit about you first. Okay, sister?
You go.
All right. So Lynn Ames is a best-selling author of 16 novels. She is a 6-time Goldie Award winner, a 2-time, Lammy?
Mm-hmm.
Lammy Award finalist, a Forward Indies Book of the Year Award finalist, a Writer's Digest Book Awards Honorable Mention recipient, winner of the Anne Banyan Award for Popular Fiction, and winner of Alice B. Medal for Lifetime Achievement. Whew, that's just a lot right there, sister. Oh my goodness.
It makes me sound old.
No, it makes you sound wise.
Oh, good. I like that better.
Wise and busy. For more than half a decade, she was an award-winning broadcast journalist. She's a former press secretary to the New York State Senate Minority Leader, spokesperson for the nation's third largest prison system, and a nationally recognized speaker and public relations professional with an expertise in branding and image. Wow, that's a lot. And there's a whole bunch more, but you guys are going to get to learn that just as you get to know a little more about Lynn. So welcome, my friend.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much, Sunny.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm excited to be here with you because as I was sitting with when I first started doing this off the cuff, which was brought on by the pandemic, and I just kind of created my short list of people that I wanted to have on here. You were one of the people that I wanted to have. And there was a variety of reasons. One of them is we have the angel connection that has been, you know, kind of weaved through our different connections throughout the years. But the other one is that, you know, with the pandemic, I didn't even know that you were a press secretary for New York State Senate Minority Leader. I didn't know that. But I think that you have, like, I like that my sense is, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, so you can tell me, but that you have a good footing on each side. You've got this spiritual connection and this angelic connection, but then you're also grounded in this 3D world and the experiences that we're having here. And I feel like that's how I am as well. And it's not always easy to be there. We don't always find people that way. So
no.
Do you feel that way?
Yes, absolutely. You're so right. And I mean, it makes for interesting conversations with the angels now, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It sure does. It sure does. So Lynn, I was just thinking, I don't actually even remember how we met.
I do.
Oh, you do? Good. Because I was like, do you remember? Because if you remember, you can go ahead and tell that story.
It's actually pretty funny. you won't remember that. I know that you won't remember that it was me.
Okay.
It was the first year you did Celebrate Your Life.
Mm.
And you were teaching a class on Archangel Michael.
Yes.
And I had just started to be menopausal or premenopausal. And the reason I remember this is because I came up to you afterwards and I asked you a question, and it was really funny after the fact. I asked you if how you could tell the difference between a hot flash and Archangel Michael's hot energy. And you looked at me in all seriousness and you said, "I don't know." And I looked at you again and I thought, well, that's because you're like 25 years younger than me. Of course you don't know. And by the way, I still can't tell you the difference always between Michael and a hot flash.
Well, and here's the thing is now I've grown up and now I have them too. So welcome to the party, Sunny.
And so do you know the difference now?
Actually, I think that they feel quite similar. So I think it really is hard actually to discern the difference between that presence and your physical body sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great, okay. See, I didn't know that story. What I do know is we've gotten to celebrate some really special events.
Together. The most special event in the whole world. I actually wrote about it about half an hour ago. I said to people, if you don't know who Sunny Dawn Johnson is, this is all you need to know about her. You need to know that when Cheryl asked me to marry her, I had only one condition, and that condition was that Sunny would be the one to marry us. That was the only condition. I said, I don't care where in the world we get married, Sunny has to be there.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was very honored to not only get to officiate your wedding, but at my healing center. And it was, it just such a, it really, I've done a lot of weddings, but such a beautiful display of what I would say unconditional love looks like.
Aw, thank you, sweetie. So, that was,
and it was on your birthday too, I remember.
Yeah, you're right. Our anniversary is on my birthday. Yeah, that's exactly,
I remember
that's
that. Exactly I remember
right.
that.
So, yeah, it's so she doesn't forget.
I don't think she forgets much.
She doesn't forget anything.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Not Miss Organization.
No.
So then tell me where how you've been managing your energy during this. I mean, we got a lot going on, right? We've got the pandemic, we've got what's happening right now in our nation, and how have you been managing your energy, and what do you see as one of the things that really stands out to you, especially for people that are listening right now, that we could do to be the change?
Thanks. It's been an interesting time for sure, a challenging time, even for people like you and me who, you know, live half the time here and half the time there. It's a challenging time. The energy on the planet is challenging. The amount of fear in the atmosphere and the fear vibration is so strong, and it is truly affecting pretty much everybody I know, even those who are incredibly skilled at what we do, you know. And so I think one of the best things that I have done is to occasionally shut down all my electronics, shut down, tune that out, and tune in here, and tune in to the angels, and tune in to God, and listen, really listen to what the message is. Because it's so easy to get wrapped up in all of the stories and in all of the, you know, anxiety that's out there, and the the uncertainty of the time. And I mean, first it was the pandemic, and that created its own set of uncertainty and doubts. You feel that doubt. I know you're an empath. I am to a lesser extent than you are, but you, I know, can feel all of the doubt, all of this churning that's going on. And, you know, you have to stop and take time to meditate, even if it's 2 minutes a day, even if it's, you know, right when you get up and right when you go to bed. But don't go to bed looking at electronics. Don't go to bed looking at the news. Don't go to bed looking at your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed or Instagram or any place where anybody else's energy is entering your bedroom. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know what? You have to make that sacred space and save it for yourself and your own energy and your own vibration and tune into your heart. You know, even if you don't understand or believe in anything else, tune into your own body and your own heart be present there and just remember and say the words, I'm safe. I'm safe. This is my safe place. You know, everything, as you know, comes from within. It's not from without. It's from within. It's from without, if you think about the angels. But I'm saying, you know, your energy is yours. Yeah. And it's up to you to police your own energy.
Yeah.
And the best thing you can do is just to pay close attention to how you feel. You know, is your heart racing? Is your brain spinning? Can you not, you know, shut down? Because I think right now, a lot of the energy that we feel is people just can't seem to shut off the noise. And it's not easy. You know, nobody's perfect at this. Forgive yourself, you know, if you feel like you're not doing a great job right now. Mm-hmm. And just give yourself permission every now and again to be afraid. It's okay to be afraid. It's what you do about it that really matters. So it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to wonder where we're going with all this. It's okay to ask the questions. What's not quite so okay is to stay there. You've got to recognize it, acknowledge it, forgive it, and move on.
Yeah. That's exactly what I've been saying is feel your feelings, feel the fear, acknowledge it, move through it, scream, cry, punch pillows, kick, yell, whatever you need to do, not at anybody, and then move.
Right.
And then move.
You can't stay stuck. When you stay stuck, that's when you start to really, you know, it's like, I guess an analogy that I would use is it's like your tires when you get stuck in the mud. Mm-hmm. You know, if you keep spinning those wheels faster and faster, all that's going to happen is you're going to dig in deeper. Mm-hmm. You have to stop and take a breath and think for a second and feel for a second and know that you're safe and you can find a way out of this and then put some traction under your tires and move.
Yes. Well, and isn't that kind of what has happened in our society is we've been just spinning our tires, just spinning our wheels. And it's time to actually really get some traction.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, that is what I start to see happening. Mm-hmm. It's what I see happening with the peaceful parts of the protests, which are the real, I mean, that's the change agent. Yeah. It's not the looting and, you know, the bad behavior. It's the people who really in their hearts want change, believe in change, know that for too long, too many people have been left out, left behind, treated badly, treated wrong, and that it's time for us to fix it. We all have a role to do. Some of our roles are bigger than others. But everybody has an important role to play, whatever your role is. I mean, if it's sitting still and being quiet and listening, that's your role. Yeah. And learning, that's your role. It's not unimportant. It's not inconsequential. Don't you know, make it smaller than it is because it's okay. I mean, that's your role. Just check in with yourself and know what your piece of this is. Take responsibility for the things that you need to change. Educate yourselves. Do what you need to do to get to a place where you feel good about who you are and what you're doing and what you're doing to help the situation.
And everybody can help, right? Everybody. There's
everybody.
I think, you know, that's part of one of the things I've talked about a few times over the last couple of weeks is one of the things that pushed a button for me. And it did. The human part of me, the ego part of me was like, all right, listen, you know, let's stop minimizing the power that each one of us has. And just because we're not doing it one way doesn't mean we're not doing it a way that's beneficial. And I think that's a dangerous part of the game that people are playing right now in kind of the projection of things is everybody matters. And meaning that everyone's role in how they show up, it all matters right now. And not to minimize, well, I'm just staying at home writing cards or making posters for the people that are protesting, but I don't dare go out there. That's fine. Don't do the part that you're great at. Maybe you're creative. Sunny is not. And make your posters, you know, but everyone has a role to play. And it's so important what you said that Some are bigger than others, but that doesn't mean that they don't all matter.
And that doesn't mean it's any less important, because sometimes it's the little things that are more important than the big things, because without the little things, the big things can't begin to happen. You know, my litmus test, and I know this is your litmus test too, is this, is what you're doing based in love? Does it feel loving? Does it feel positive? Does it lift you up when you do it? Mm-hmm. If it does, then it's something good to do. Right. If you feel, you know, conflicted or anxious, or it doesn't feel good, then, you know, that's a sign that it's the right thing for you.
Right.
You know, and one of the things that I am finding very clearly, you know, this is something I've always been, you know, gifted with from the angels, I guess, is to me, there are two major factors in the world. And you, I know, believe this too. There's love and there's fear. Mm-hmm. Everything stems from one or the other. Love is the most powerful vibration in the universe. It's the most powerful thing. And if you are doing something that is love-based and feels loving, then your vibration is lifting up other people and lifting up the planet. And the more we can vibrate at that high level, the more love we put into the world, the more light we shine, and the more it shines away all the darkness that is, you know, sort of swirling right now. The chaos is part of darkness. And the more light you shine, as you know, it's like, you know, going in the dark and shining a flashlight. If you shine a flashlight, it shines away the dark.
Yeah.
That spot is light. And the more of us who shine light, the less darkness can find a, you know, a foothold.
Mm-hmm. And the more clearly we see. And right now it's not that this shit hasn't been going on. It's just been that it's been covered up, right? That it's just been hidden or not looked at or whatever. This has gone on for centuries. And so the light is shining on it so that it can be revealed so that we can do something about it instead of burying it under the carpet like so many of us were taught growing up.
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly the point, my friend. And that is exactly it. It's not that people feel differently now than they did a year ago or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's that they feel like they have permission now to express that. And what I say to that is, wouldn't you rather know it's there and be able to see it so that you can address it than not know that it's there? Yeah. It's been bubbling under the surface all this time. Mm-hmm. You know, in a sense, this is a great opportunity for us to heal. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity for us to heal ourselves. It's an opportunity for us to heal each other, mm-hmm. and to recognize that we're all as one. Yeah. It's an opportunity to lift others up with us. It's an opportunity to shine light. It's an opportunity once and for all to move the darkness out and make it a conscious choice to do so. And I think that's, you know, we're coming to this apex, we're coming to this boiling point, and that's exactly what we're doing right now. It feels horrible.
Yeah.
It feels so painful. You can feel everyone's pain, and I share in that, and you share in that. It's what you do with it, and it's how you look at it. And for me, you asked, you know, how do you get through this time, and how do you survive this? And I think part of it is your expectation and your attitude. You know, my expectation and my true belief is that we are getting to a much better place, mm-hmm. as a result of all this. This is growing pains. It's very difficult. It's very painful, and it's very real. And I honor how real it is for all of my friends of color, particularly my Black friends, and I have many, and my trans friends. And I mean, everybody who is feeling less than, everybody who is feeling unsafe right now, those are real feelings, and that is true. But we are getting ourselves to a place where we'll all feel safer, and not just feel safer, but we're going to be safer.
Yes. Yes. Be safer, I think, is so, I mean, feeling, absolutely. But when we feel it, then we be it, and the ripple effect of that is that then it allows others to be it, and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So after I read that you were the, now what were you? You were the...
Which time?
You've done a lot of things, girl. I'm like, wow. Okay. The former press secretary to the New York State Senate Minority Leader. So if this, because you did so much in branding and image and media. And so if in this circumstance right now, you had to advise someone, because we look at the news and this is all I do is go, oh my God, seriously. Like, I can't even stand to watch anything. I can't watch anything. I can read because I feel like reading doesn't, I don't take it in. I'm not so empathic when I read. I just see the words. But if I see the images and hear at the same time, I'm like just gone. Right. Mm-hmm. So having that perspective, if you were to advise the media in general, mm-hmm. What would your suggestion be? How would you approach this? What would you say?
Well, first, it's a great question. Thank you. First of all, let's acknowledge that the media today is nothing like the media was mm-hmm. when I was a broadcast journalist and when I taught journalism. This is not journalism, what's happening right now. Let me be very, very clear that this is not journalism. What this is commentary masked under a heading of journalism. But this is not what journalism is. This is not what journalism is meant to do. What journalism is meant to do is to illuminate. It's to give you both sides of the story and let you make your own conclusions based on a series of facts. Mm-hmm. And what we have now, and what we have now is a situation where instead of just giving you the facts and letting you draw your own conclusions, they want to drive your conclusion. This is why they're in business in their mind. And I don't know when this got twisted this way, but this is where we are. And this is how we got so polarized, mm-hmm. not just in politics, but in journalism as well. Mm-hmm. So let's recognize first and foremost that this is what you're seeing for the most part. There are some exceptions, but for the most part, this is not journalism. If I were advising the media right now, I would say, number one, get back to your core values. Get back to what you are supposed to be doing and stop, you know, trying to push the needle one way or another. Mm-hmm. Money is the driving force behind what you're seeing. Yeah. Greed, darkness, money is behind what you're seeing on the screen right now and what you're seeing in the headlines right now, because paid advertising, you know, journalism doesn't function in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. There are ads, there are, you know, sponsors, there are things like that. And, you know, in order to get sponsors, now they sort of push the agenda. Mm-hmm. You can't have that. So if I were a media executive, I'd say, get rid of all that, get back to your core principles and find another way to fund yourselves. Either find another way to fund yourselves or go back to your your ethics that say, it doesn't matter who invests in us, our positions are the same.
Yes.
Next, if you are in charge of the editorial pages or the if you're the producer who produces the nightly news, stop elevating the darkness. Mm-hmm. Stop elevating the darkness. Stop giving it oxygen. Because when you repeat the most outrageous, outlandish tweet, that has no basis in fact, you are giving it oxygen. You are giving it air that otherwise it wouldn't get. It's like, you know, if you close a door on a fire, it has no more oxygen, it goes out.
Right.
This is the same thing. So every time someone says something outrageous and you say, look, he said this, mm-hmm. that was probably a million people who didn't know he said it until you told them he said it.
Right.
It just expands everything. So all of the headlines that you see, I mean, it's just, you could see that the headlines come from them being shocked that someone would say such a thing. But in saying it, you give it more weight than it deserves. And if you stop doing that, if you just stop doing that and just start reporting the facts, mm-hmm. it will change everything. It changes everything.
Well, and also on our end, if you see a crazy headline and you go and watch it, that's just the click that you're taking the bait every time. And so you have to be very And I think this is difficult, but you have to be very mindful of where you're going to even get any of your information, because the reality of it is it's just click, click, click to give you, to get you where they want you to go.
That's exactly right. You know, you have to resist the temptation. It's not easy. But first of all, if you're going to pay attention that often, please use multiple sources. Mm-hmm. Investigate. See who is giving you more of the facts and who's giving you more that is not fact-based, but rather supposition-based or opinion-based. Mm-hmm. If you are getting all of your news from any one source, you're not doing yourself a service on either end. You know, it doesn't matter what the source is. Mm-hmm. I would say you are still not doing yourself a service that way. Check multiple sources and be sure that the sources you're checking are real. Right. Because there's so much misinformation out there. You know, the darkness wants to create chaos. We know this.
Yeah.
So don't let them do it. Don't be an agent for that, even an unwitting agent for that. Educate yourself and know what's fact and what isn't. And stop giving oxygen to, you don't retweet someone's really horrible tweet. Mm-hmm. Don't get caught in that. You know, don't send on a news article or whatever it is that just shows the most horrible thing, because all you are doing is raising that vibration further.
Yep. You're just activating. You're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution.
Exactly.
You're part of the love or you're part of the fear. And whatever we activate and we put attention on, as well as what we share, just grows bigger.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's the law of attraction, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. So don't you think, though, like I was thinking this the other day, my husband and I were talking, and I was thinking there has to be people, young people, people in all different age ranges that got into this because they wanted to give people information, like real information. And because it's kind of from the top down, you know, money talks. Things have gotten shifted. And I know that's part of why now we have the freedom of speech. So we have podcasts and people go and they listen to podcasts instead of the news and media. And I think that, you know, this is a time where some of those people that they had the best of intentions and then their jobs flipped and they kind of, well, I've got to have a job. And now is a time where so many people's eyes are opening in so many ways. That as much as, again, it's difficult, it's frustrating, it's confusing, you're like, I don't know what the hell to believe and all of that. At the same time, it's also shining a light.
Correct. That's absolutely true. I mean, there's no question that this is a time for a very clear delineation between what is love and what is fear.
Yeah.
What is love and what is fear? And, you know, I would say to people, whether or not you're really tuned in, just listen to your own vibration, your own body. Mm-hmm. How does this feel? How does this feel? How does this feel? How does this feel? Which feels better to you? And check your sources. There's a lot of misinformation going on, and it's couched in ways that make it look real.
Exactly.
For sure, it looks real, and it looks like a legitimate source, but you know, it's probably not. Chances are.
Majority is, it's not. So
right.
Dig deep.
Yeah, I mean, you actually be careful, be mindful of where you're going and what you're looking at, and don't mindlessly repeat something that you've heard until you've checked it out yourself and you know that it is accurate, or ask somebody who you trust to know whether it's accurate.
Right. Yeah, I usually go to my husband because he listens to all lot of different, like, I don't do anything about any of that. I don't even, like, I would just be in my own little bubble, hanging out with my own friends, and I have no clue at all. And I kind of like my life that way. Not that I don't want to be a change maker. I do. But I choose to listen or to read the information that I need to make a decision from a heart-based, spirit-guided. And then I take it, I tune it all out. I've got the information I need. I know where I want to focus. I listen to my guidance and my intuition, which I think is another really powerful thing that we're stepping into, right? Is that we're not, don't listen to what everybody else is saying to do. Listen to your to your own guidance. And then that's where I focus. And I'm not saying my way is the right way, but what I am saying is that what I know isn't healthy is to stay in the cycle. It's not healthy to stay in the cycle. It will make you crazy. Your mind, you literally like lose your mind crazy, I think, to just stay in that cycle 24/7. And a lot of people do it.
It's toxic.
It is.
To stay in the cycle 24/7. Because you lose a piece of yourself in that. You know, I'm more like you. I'm more in, even as much of a part of that world as I was, I don't watch anymore either. Mm-hmm. I don't watch anymore. I can't. Yep. I know how I feel when I do. And I know that it's not healthy and it doesn't feel good. And so like you, I choose my sources. I choose the most unbiased sources I can find. And I read.
Yeah.
And I read. And that's what I do. And I can choose when to shut that off and when not to shut it off. But I haven't turned on the television news in probably a year, maybe more. Yeah. Because I don't need to.
I haven't since right after September 11th.
Yeah.
Television news. Haven't done that. But here's another question I have. So in doing this and finding, you know, the places that feel in alignment with you and getting those sources for yourself and listening to your own guidance, would you say that part of the challenge for people is that, like, I hear a lot of people that they shame them into, well, then you're not informed. Like, well, don't you really care what's happening? Well, you ought to know because you're, you know, whether it's because you're American or because you're a part of this community or what have you. And I think a lot of times people literally feel like they're uninformed. So they feel almost this pressure to dig in and get all that information. And I wonder what your perspective on that is.
You can be very well informed and not have to be immersed.
Yeah. That's good. Informed versus immersed.
Yes. I mean, there's a massive difference between being well informed, and trust me, I am incredibly well informed, and being immersed in it to the point where you can't find your way back out.
Yeah.
I read widely and I read a lot, but I choose very carefully where I dig deep. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can see a headline in the New York Times or the Washington Post or on Fox News or on MSNBC or on CNN, and I know immediately within myself whether this is a fear-based headline that, you know, is going to amp me up and isn't based in fact, or whether this is a factually based article that is worth my time and my energy, mostly my energy, because, you know, that's really what we're talking about here is what's an energetic match. And by an energetic match, I don't mean things you want to hear versus things you don't want to hear.
Right.
I mean things that are healthy versus things that are unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, I read a lot of things I don't want to hear. It pains me. But I also know that those are things that are important for me to face, mm-hmm. important for me to deal with. But I don't immerse myself in other people's fear-based conjecture.
Yeah.
Or opinions, or, you know, I don't have to go there. I don't have to. I have the power not to do that. It doesn't mean that I haven't read the headline and I don't know what it's about. I do. Mm-hmm. It sure doesn't mean I don't know what's going on in the world. Trust me, I know exactly what's going on in the world. It just means that I choose how much energy I'm going to spend there.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and I choose instead to spend my energy focusing on the important issues of the day that I know, places I know that I can make a difference in one way or another, things I believe I need to do to make myself better, to be the change that I want to see, mm-hmm. Things that I feel like I need to know in order to understand better other points of view that aren't mine. I certainly don't read only things that align with my own point of view. That would be counterproductive.
Yes.
I read widely in order to better understand, because we really are all as one. And so you have to sort of find that place where in order to explain to someone, you know, from a love-based position, why what they're doing is racist or not anti-racist, you have to know something in order to do that. So educate yourself, read, you know, watch important pieces of film or documentaries or things like that. There are many things you can do to better yourself, to make yourself a better ally, to make yourself part of the change that we all want to see, which is to a more love-based place, to a more, a kinder place, a place of empathy and compassion and, you know, integrity. Integrity matters. Integrity matters.
Yes.
And you can get there without immersing yourself in the darkest parts, in the darkest corners of the news business, of the information business.
I totally agree. All right. So, Lynn, tell us a little bit about this. This is a really special week for you. So it's a big time. And I'm really excited that you created that. I was just saying before we came on, I'm really excited that you created and carved a little space for us during this time, because as in your bio, you know, 16 novels and your next one is released. Is it this week that it's released?
It released yesterday.
Yesterday. Oh, my goodness. But better yesterday. So it's available. So it's called 46.
Yeah.
And tell us about it. Tell everyone about, you know, the basis of it.
Sure. 46 is the 46th president of the United States. In other words, the next president of the United States. She is Emma McMaster. She is a kick-ass woman.
I love the she part, first of all.
She is a kick-ass woman. And on top of that, she happens to be a lesbian. Mm-hmm. She is, you know, this book was, as I said, you know, this is part of my purpose. I took all that experience that you read folks up front, and I used that, starting with the thought to myself months and months and about a year ago, really, which is, what would it take to heal from all of this divisiveness, all of this polarization, everything that is swirling right now, the hurt that we're all feeling, the, you know, the damage to our souls? Mm-hmm. What would it take to get out of that? What could we, what could a president do, the next president do, to restore faith in the media, to restore integrity to our government, to restore decency and kindness, and lift people up? And so I started with that, and I came up with Emma McMaster's. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted her to be the change we wanted to see. I wanted her to, I want people to read this so that it lifts them back up out of this place, get up off the mat, figure out that we're going to, we can't ever go back. There isn't a back to go to. Mm-hmm. We all have to move forward. Yeah. And the question, and you know, you don't want to move back, honestly. You want to move forward. And the question is, what does forward look like? And what are the right things to say and do to get us there? What's necessary? What's healing? What will raise the vibration, our vibration, and the vibration of this country and the vibration of the planet? And, you know, it's really a love letter to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, 46 is a love letter to help us to find our way forward. Mm-hmm. And that's why I created it. And I have to say, I mean, it was very healing for me to write it, you know, because I was healing myself through all of this as I was writing. And I hope that when people read it, and so far it looks like it's working pretty well, people feel better. Sure. You know, people feel more hopeful. I wanted people to feel hope again.
Yes.
And it's something I think that's been sorely lacking for too long. Mm-hmm. And so I created Emma McMaster's and 46 to give people hope. It's a love story. It's a love story between this president, this new president, Emma McMaster's, and the country. It's a love story between Emma McMaster's, who is a widow when we meet her, when she goes into the White House, and she meets someone and falls in love again. So it's a story of hope and the fact that there is a future, even when you can't see it coming, even when you think you're done, there's somebody there for you. There's something there for you. So that's 46. And as I said, it released yesterday in ebook and print. The audiobook will be out at the end of the month. I'm very excited for people to read this, and I hope that it achieves what I wanted it to achieve, which is just to make people cheer again, to give them something to lift them up.
Well, it sounds amazing. Let me ask you this. What is your process with, like, so is that something that you sit down and it comes to you, or is it something that you make a decision of, okay, I want to put this message out? And then how long does it take you to write?
Depends on the book.
I know that.
Yeah, it depends. You know this. It depends on the book, and the process also depends on the topic. You know, something like this took a lot of research, obviously. You know, I am very much a fan of factually based fiction. In other words, the things that are real in that book are real in that book. You know, the things that are fiction, purely made up, the characters, yes. But the facts are the facts, and I like to be accurate and get things right. So, for instance, I virtually learned how to fly a Black Hawk helicopter for this book.
Oh. Wow.
From the woman, from a general who was, she flew Blackhawks, you know, in the Army, and she was the first female test pilot for Boeing. So that was very cool. You know, she's like, no, this is what you're going to do. You could do this, this, this. I never got in a Blackhawk, but I learned how to fly one.
I love that.
It was fabulous. It was just great. You know, so I had a lot of help. I had, you know, in a moment of true interesting synergy, a college classmate of mine, and actually we worked very closely together in college, actually happened to be George W. Bush's press secretary. Mm. And he's a name you'd all recognize. And while we don't agree on much anymore, mm-hmm. He is still my friend. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to separate some things out. I there are many things I can't understand about what he is trying to do and what he's been doing. But when I asked him to help me with protocol in the White House, mm-hmm. he was very happy to help me with that. We never talked politics, and the entire time I was interviewing him and talking to him and asking him questions, we never once spoke of politics, because we know we come from very different places. Mm-hmm. But he was very helpful to me with protocol issues, little things. You know, I asked him a question and he just laughed. He was grateful that I asked him the questions. Well, what was something that everybody gets wrong? You know, what did the American president get wrong? What did the West Wing get wrong? What did all these shows that feature the White House get wrong so that I can get it right?
Right.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So a lot of research goes into it. So the process depends on how much research I have to do. Mm-hmm. So I research first. The idea comes first, obviously. And sometimes it comes, you know, it's inspired. And sometimes, most often it starts with the question, what if I see something happen or something, you know, some piece of information. And I think, well, what if that happened just a little bit differently? Mm-hmm. You know, what if it wasn't quite what it seemed? Mm-hmm. And then I start playing with that idea in my mind. And in this instance, for 46, in this particular instance, it was very much, you know, watching everything that was happening and feeling what everyone was feeling and thinking, I have got to do something. I have to help. I can help. I have the knowledge. I have the background. I have the experience to tell a story that will really make a difference for people. And this is what we do. We change, right? We're change makers. We help people find love and in whatever form it is. And so it started with that notion that I needed to find a way to help people forward. Mm-hmm. And then the obvious character for that was the President of the United States. It was the focal point. And from there, the rest of it just sort of came in, which is how I knew it was the right thing to do. You know, you find out, you get confirmation all the time that what you're doing is the right thing.
Yeah.
And so I had plenty of confirmation. Then I started to lay out what research I would need, find the experts that could help me get it done. And then I started writing. So the process, I actually started working on 46, January 1st mm-hmm. of this year.
Of this year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I started working on it January 1st of this year. And I actually wrote the words, the end, not that long ago, about a month ago or so. A little bit late. But, you know, I started the book before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote through the pandemic, which was not easy to do. To focus through all of that was not the simplest thing in the whole wide world. And I had to make a conscious decision. Several things happened during the process, which were kind of interesting. One was I had written this scene, this scenario, that was a means for me to get the two main characters in the same room. And the problem was, as I just finished writing the scene and closing down my computer, what I had written came true in real life. And it was too close, and I had to rip it out and come up with something else because it was too raw and too close. And I said, okay, well, all right, let's just regroup for a second. And then, you know, the next big decision I had to make was whether or not to include the pandemic in this book. The book opens on November 3rd, 2020. It opens on election night, next election night, you know, and I had to make a very clear choice. You know, I wrote the opening scene taking place in Central Park in New York with 300,000 people in the crowd. Will we be able to do that? Will it be safe to do that? Well, we're doing it, you know, now out with protests, but is it safe to do that? I don't know. I don't know about you, but my crystal ball is not working.
No. Crystal balls are not working right now. We're having to learn and expand with everyone.
Exactly. So I'm not quite sure. You know, I tried to tune in and get the answers, but that's not in my, you know, that wasn't for me to know at that moment. And so I had to make a decision about it. And the decision I made was that it's too soon to write about the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's too raw for too many people. It's too real. And people on some level in a novel want to escape a little bit, at least a little bit, give them something, you know? And so I made a conscious choice not to include the pandemic at all in the book. I never mention it. Because it just felt more healing to me if I didn't.
Well, and you said that the book was about hope anyway. And so and so I think that'd be in alignment with, you know, the hope of a new opportunity and expansion and growth and coming into a place where we have that ability to be able to do those things.
Exactly.
So, so does Cheryl help you at all? Like, is she your research assistant? Like, does she research things for you, your lovely wife?
My lovely wife. My lovely wife loves nonfiction, does not like fiction at all, but she loves my books.
Of course, yeah, that's just part of it, that they have to.
It's a requirement, I tell you.
It is.
She read every page with me as I wrote it. And she told me what she liked and what she thought, you know. When I had research questions, she would sometimes, you know, stick her head in and help me research. She's particularly helpful. As you know, she is incredibly organized. And there are a lot of characters, for instance, in this book. And so she was very helpful in timelines, and I'm no good at math, you know, and she's excellent at this kind of thing. So, you know, if I said someone was 25 in 1986, how old would they be right now? This is a word problem. I don't do word problems, but she does. And, you know, so she kept me on track with, you know, if there were any inconsistencies in names, in places, in people, and things that happened. And no, that couldn't have happened then because that wasn't in the right timeline. And so she's very good at keeping me organized and on track that way. She is also incredibly supportive when it comes to, you know, no, I'm clearing that off your plate because you need to sit down and write. So I'll take care of this. You take care of this. And, you know, when you're ready, you know, this will be here for you or whatever it is. So she's incredibly supportive and incredibly wonderful. And it's different for me because this is her fourth book with me. But I've written alone for years and years and years. And that was an adjustment. You know, that's a little bit of a change kind of thing, you know, but it worked out great. And I'm writing I'm writing Dot's biography.
Oh, yay. I remember reading that. Yes.
So Dot Wilkinson is the greatest catcher, the greatest female catcher who ever played the game of women's softball. Sonny got to meet Dot because Dot was part of my wedding. Dot was part of our wedding. And she still talks about you, by the way. She loves Brett.
She loves my husband. I know. She did. She wanted to snuggle up to him.
She said the poor guy was outnumbered by women. I had to help him.
Is she 98, 99?
She is 98 years old. She's still living on her own.
And she's spunky as hell. Like, she fire, that woman. It's amazing.
She's still sharp as a tack. It's amazing. Yeah. She drove to the grocery store the other day. I'm like, Doc, did you take a mask? Please, why are you doing this? Don't do this. Someone will go for you. I assure you. No, I needed to go. She's still got her driver's license. Okay. Yeah, but I've been writing Dot's biography in some way or another for a decade. Mm-hmm. And now I'm really writing it. And my point in telling you that was, you asked how Cheryl helps. Cheryl and I came back to Phoenix and interviewed Dot together. And as I was interviewing Dot over a series of 5 days, I interviewed her for like 5 hours a day, and she was amazing with her stamina. And the whole time I was doing that, Cheryl was scanning documents and taking photos of photos and doing all of those things that I wouldn't have had the time to do in addition to the interviews that will make all the difference in the world to this project.
Awesome.
So invaluable for so many reasons.
For those of you that aren't familiar, so it's Dot Wilkinson, mm-hmm. and greatest softball catcher, female softball catcher of all time. And really just spunky gal, really amazing. And that's going to be an incredible story because I'm not a softball baseball fan. I don't know anything about it, but just the little bit of conversation, she's still so passionate about it at 98 and had so much memory still. It was amazing.
Yeah. She's remarkable. She remembers everything. You know, she remembers a ball and strike call. She remembers, you know, getting thrown out of a game. She's just a remarkable treasure and resource, and not just for her softball, but just for her life. Mm-hmm. You know, she's such an uplifting human being and such a heart-based person. And, you know, one of the great honors of my life is to be family to her.
Yes.
You know, that's just amazing to me. And we still talk every single night.
And was she featured, Lynn, in A League of Their Own? Was her role in there somewhere?
She turned it down.
Okay.
She was asked.
Yeah, I remember her saying something about it. So that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, she turned down, first of all, she turned down the opportunity to play in that league because she wasn't going to play in a skirt. And she wasn't going to, you know, they had very strict rules in that league, and she didn't want to abide by those rules. She didn't think that was real softball, and she wasn't interested. Even though they offered her in 1942 or 43, they offered her $75 a week to play, and that's a lot of money back then.
Wow.
Uh-huh. She said, yeah, I don't think so. I just play for the love of the game. Thanks anyway, though. And she walked away from that.
Yeah.
And stayed in her own league. She played from 1933 to 1965. For the Phoenix Ramblers. So
amazing.
Remarkable. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to that book too. I'll have to get an autograph, two autographs.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Or three, actually. Cheryl's in there too. She's got a supporting role. All right, Lynn, I have a couple of just kind of fun getting to know you questions. Okay.
You bet.
What's your favorite number?
22.
Why?
Actually, it's 722, if I'm going to be really, truly accurate. For a lot of reasons, but 722 in angel numbers, as you know, means, you know, your energy essentially has created and affected miracles. Mm-hmm. And so 722 is very meaningful. Growing up, 22 was my favorite number because my favorite basketball player wore 22. It was a guy named Dave DeBuscher who played for the New York Knicks in the 1960s. And so I wore 22 because he wore 22.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, as I got older and all this stuff happened, 722 became my very favorite number. And it's turned out to be the most significant number in my life for any number of reasons. But it's also the day that Cheryl called me to ask me out. And of course, she had to do that 5 times before I understood what she was doing.
You're a little slow in the love area, weren't you? You weren't quite picking it up.
No.
You weren't picking up what she was throwing down.
No.
Okay. Next question. Is there an item in your house that you can't live without? And if there is, what is it? Like, what is your thing that you've got to have?
Can it be a living and breathing thing, or does it have to be a thing?
Well, that's probably your animals, I'm going to guess, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. Cannot live without the fur kids. I can't live without my wife. I can't live without the fur kids. But if it were a thing that I can't live without, my computer. Because I can't, you know, that's the way I write. Mm. I write through my fingers, and I don't write well longhand. And I'm not good at speech to text.
Yeah, me either. You know, I had, when I was first writing, I had my publisher said, you know, if you want to record something, just speak it into your phone, and then you can, you know, go and Temi it or whatever, and turn it into the words, and then you've got to go. I'm like, I talk completely different than I write, so my talking feels very. It's not even the same message.
Yeah.
That didn't work for me either.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So is it a laptop or is it a computer? Do you work on a laptop or do you work on a regular?
I work on a MacBook Air.
Okay.
That is connected to my desktop monitor.
Okay. Yeah. I just was curious. That's just a sunny, curious question.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. Let me throw you out a different one. Morning routine. I am a big fan of morning routines. I have my own morning routine. Do you have a morning routine? And if you do, what is it?
You bet I do. I every morning begins with, you know, getting in touch with Source and the angels. And I clear first thing every morning. It's the first thing I do is I clear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I take the dog needs to go, you know,
mm-hmm.
feed the dog, take the dog out, feed the dog. You know, clean the floor while I'm, you know, meditating. This is meditating, you know.
That's the process.
And then Cheryl and I spend probably an hour, her having coffee. I don't drink coffee. Could you imagine me on coffee, really? So she drinks coffee and I drink water, and we just sort of sit and commune with nature and catch up on the business side of business, like emails and things like that after that. And then I exercise. My morning routine is always exercise. I always do the business side of things and the exercise side of things in the morning. And then the afternoon and evenings are more creative for me. That's my writing time or, you know, reading time, whatever else I'm going to do. It happens later in the day. But in the morning, it is always clearing, getting clear, getting in touch, being present, you know, breathing and exercising.
And what kind of exercise do you love? Because you're a fit woman. So what kind of exercise do you love to do?
Well, there's a lot of exercise that I love to do. I've always been an athlete. But, you know, we are very fortunate and very blessed to live where we do. We live on top of a mountain. And so we walk up and down the mountain almost every day. We power walk up and down throughout the mountains. Every view is a perfect view. You know, you occasionally run into a bear, and that's never, you know, always be careful. Huh. But we walk up and down the mountain a lot. We actually have a gym in our home. So I lift weights and do things like that right here in the house. I'm very lucky to be able to do that, especially in a pandemic. You know, yeah. We didn't know we were building the house for a pandemic, but apparently we were.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew? You know, yeah. So my routine hasn't changed at all as a result of any of that. I've actually finally gotten back to the weight I was when Cheryl met me. You know, everybody else seems to be gaining and we're losing.
Right.
And I think, but that's, you know, that's a mindful decision. We've been going to the store only once a month to shop, and it's all fresh vegetables and fresh produce and, you know, fresh proteins and things like that. And we're being very mindful about what we cook. And, you know, it just makes us, there's nothing bad in the house to have.
Right. You can't, and there's nowhere to go to go get something.
Get into trouble. We can't get into trouble except for popcorn. Except for popcorn. And only once a week.
Okay. Last question for you, my friend, is there an interesting fact about you that most people don't know?
Probably several, but if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
People would notice that if I was missing.
Yeah, they definitely would. And I feel really badly about it. You know, there goes my karma right there. Let's not do that. Is there an interesting fact about me that people don't know? Yeah, I'm as short as I am because I'm wicked afraid of heights.
Mm. Wicked. So like a bridge or like heights that you are physically by the space, or can you be in a car and you're still scared?
It depends on where I am. I'm fine generally in a car. Mm-hmm. But like, for instance, I was never the kid who climbed a tree. Mm-hmm. Too afraid to climb a tree. I'm never comfortable on the second floor of a mall. Mm. I would never walk next to the railing. Mm-hmm. If I climb, you know, I've done this before. I trained with a guy at one point who was climbing Mount Everest. And so we ran to the top of Whiteface Mountain in Lake Placid, which is where they had the Olympics in 1980. We ran to the top of the mountain, and it was such a windy day. And, you know, it's a gorgeous view from there. Mm-hmm. And I could not bring myself to go to the edge and look at the view. Mm-hmm. I actually got down on my hands and knees until I backed away from that area and, you know, went back down the mountain. I was fine going down, but mm-hmm. I did the same thing in the Statue of Liberty. Was very hard for me going up the inside of the crown. Mm-hmm. Wicked afraid of heights. Leaning Tower of Pisa, same thing. In college, I tried to climb, all my friends would climb out the fifth floor window of our dorm and study up on the roof. So there is actually, I have a picture of me. I had put my book on top of the dormer, on top of the bathroom window, which is where everybody climbed out. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of me literally hanging halfway out the window, and I froze. Mm-hmm. I could not go any further. Huh. Couldn't go in, couldn't go out. Somebody actually had to pull me back through the window.
Huh. So did something happen in this lifetime that you are aware of, or is that something that maybe came from some other time?
You know, at 8 years old, I watched my father fall off a ladder.
There you go.
And break 8 ribs. Mm-hmm. Falling off a ladder, putting up my basketball hoop. Mm-hmm. So there was something in this lifetime. I imagine that it goes back others also.
Yeah.
But in particular, that is a memory that has always, always stayed with me.
Yeah. 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 I figured there was some kind of connection there. Sure. Yeah. All right, my friend. So one last message you'd like to leave with all of our friends that are watching and listening on the replay and listening on the podcast.
My message to you is hold on to hope. There's plenty to hope for. Know that everything that is happening to us is purposeful, and that everything that is happening is taking us to a more love-based, more equitable, more equal, better place than we are right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel that way. It feels hard and difficult and painful and sorrowful. And it's okay to feel that way. But hold on to hope, because good is coming from this. Mm-hmm. From this will spring a better world, a better place. And we all have a role to play. And we all have a part in this that makes us all better. We're all better for you being here. Yeah. Stay with us.
Beautiful. All right. So if people want to go and read 46, how do they find you? How do they find your book? And I don't know, are you doing an audio version as well? Because I know that'll be a question too. So
yep. So the book is available widely. You can go anywhere to get it, but don't go out of your home. Stay safe. E-books are great. If you want autographed personalized books, you can go to my website, lynnames.com. And you can buy ebooks there. You can buy print books there. Yes, there's going to be an audiobook. In fact, my narrator has just finished narrating. She's doing the edits right now. The audiobook will be available at the end of this month, maybe the very beginning of next month. COVID has, you know, sort of messed with schedules, but it will be out very, very soon. And I really hope that you're going to love this book. You can find it on Amazon for your Kindle. You can find it on iBooks, iTunes. And you'll find the audiobooks in both of those places too, when they're available, and print books, but you can also get them directly from me, where I make just a little bit more if you do.
That's right. Buy them from us. When you're buying, get them from the author. Number one, you get the energy of the author when they sign the book. And number two, instead of making $1 a book, we make a little more, which is nice when you're an author, because you don't become a millionaire off of being an author. So that's
not unless you're Stephen King.
That's right. Unless you're selling millions and millions of copies. copies. So,
and by the way, folks, for my folks who are here, if you didn't know Sunny before, you need to know Sunny. Sunny is like the highest energy, nicest, best human being and spiritual being I know. And that's why I needed you to do our wedding. It's why there was no way I was getting married without you, sister. That just was never going to happen. So, and you know, Sunny is one of the most gifted psychic mediums I know, one of the most gifted angel communicators I know, and just a great agent of change. If you just need to feel better, just go to Sunny. You'll feel better just by looking at her. You'll feel better. Her energy is just so amazingly wonderful. Wow. You can't help yourself. So follow her on Facebook, follow her on Instagram, go to her website, become part of her community, do all of those things. And if you're in Arizona somewhere, go find Sunny.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's very, very sweet. I'm very honored for you too. Number one, just to be here. But number two, yes, your wedding was beautiful. It was a beautiful honor. And again, I'm not just saying that. It was really a beautiful, touching show of unconditional love. It truly was.
Well, thank you, my friend. Well, as I said to Cheryl, I said, you know, because as you know, that was sort of a last minute. The timing of it was a little bit last minute. Unlike, you know, you think Cheryl, all organization, right? And me, quite organized myself. And we did all that in like 3 days. And what I said to her was, I'm going to contact Sunny. Sunny has a very, very, very busy schedule. She's hardly ever in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. But we'll know that this is the right time to do it and the right way to do it if Sunny says yes, that she's available and she has availability in her schedule. And oh, by the way, if she could maybe, you know, I don't know, offer her place to do it in. And all of that fell into alignment, which is how I absolutely knew that, you know, we had this all going on.
Yeah, it all worked. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us. Thank you, those are that are watching, listening on the replay and on podcast. I appreciate you being here. I love to highlight people that are making change out in the world. And as all of you are aware of, just by listening to Lynn over the last hour or so, it really has been a blessing to hear the messages and to reinforce that which so many of us know, but it's just good to hear it again and to have that reminder that, hey, there is hope. So make sure you go pick up her book, 46. It's out today. It was out yesterday. If you enjoyed this, you can certainly come and join me every day at 1:11 p.m. every weekday at 1:11 p.m. for Off the Cuff podcast. If you want to go listen to some of the past ones, you can go to your podcast app on whatever system you have and search for Off the Cuff with Sunny Dawn Johnston. I thank you guys so much for joining me and I appreciate you. If you have any other comments or questions, throw them there in the comments and we'll be checking it out. Thank you guys. Mwah! Have a great one. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydawnjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend.